And now we can get this.
For sure. I am Laura Hill here in Henrietta with Mr. Clarence Ingram at his home. Today is July 10th, 2008. So last time we spoke, you explained how you came to be the head of the Rochester Business Opportunities Council. I was hoping that you could tell me a little bit more about how RBOC was developed in the community. Who put it together? How was it funded? Can you tell me a little bit more about that process?
Well, the organization itself was started after the, I call it the riots.
Okay.
But they refer to it as the urban unrest.
Unrest, uprisings,
right.
Rebellions.
After they had a series of meetings trying to come up with some vehicle that could solve the ills within the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those conversations, the Rochester Business Opportunities were born.
Who were the participants in those conversations?
The larger business community, the Kodak, the Xerox, the Cybrons, the telephone company, all the major, and the Chamber of Commerce.
Okay. Were the unions involved?
No.
Okay.
No okay. Union involved. And that's how it was born.
Mm-hmm.
Their scope of operations were to provide financial management and technical assistance to minority businesses in the Rochester and Monroe County area.
Okay.
So that's how it came about.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the years they were in existence, they never got any funding other than their own.
Okay.
They did allow the government, when Nixon became president.
Uh-huh.
He set up something called a New Deal, a New Day.
Yep.
And that agency, he set up an agency under the Department of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Called it OMBE, O-M-B-E.
Right.
Which is the Office of Minority Business Enterprise.
Right.
Under that agency, he set up what he called BDOs, Business Development Centers.
Okay.
BRCs, Business Resource Centers.
Okay.
Now he established those and funded them all over the country. He came to Rochester and wanted to become a part. First of all, they did a study because this was the first, Rochester Business Opportunity was the first in this country that started this.
Okay.
And they wanted to see how they got started and how they were doing and this kind of thing. And they wanted to become a part. But the community did not want to be joint with the government.
Okay. So the business community, the Xeroxes, the Kodaks, the
mm-hmm.
Chamber of Commerce, wanted to maintain their ownership? Is that the
correct term? Yeah, their own identity.
Their ownership of RBOC.
In other words, if they had a better partnership with the government, we had to decide together what we were going to do.
I see.
They had a lot of input. And they didn't want that.
Okay.
But they did set up a BRC here,
mm-hmm.
a Business Resource Center.
Okay.
And they paid 80% of the budget.
Okay.
And the community itself, the sponsors, which was the Rochester, they paid 20%.
Okay, so the federal
right.
government paid 80 and Rochester local paid 20.
So that's how it came about.
Okay.
Now, it worked good until we had problems. We had to come up with a budget every year.
Mm-hmm.
So we got $40,000, $50,000 consulting services.
Okay.
That was good. We put that in the budget. They was funded. But then every time we decided to use something, we had to get permission from them.
I see.
They didn't like that.
I see.
So they just severed the relationship.
Okay. So that I'm clear that I understand, there are then two parallel organizations in Rochester, the RBOC, which is being...
Business Development.
that's being run by solely by the Rochester business community.
Right.
And then there's a parallel organization that the federal government holds an 80% stake in.
Right. The WAS is not here anymore. Either one of them is here anymore.
Okay. Okay.
They're gone.
I see. I see.
The government still has an agency.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure it's in Rochester. Maybe in Buffalo somewhere that cover this area.
Sure.
They call them economic development agencies
right now. Okay.
They changed the name again from OMBE. There's no more OMBE. Office of Minority Business Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
There's a... Just a development. What do they call that? Economic development. I don't know what the name
okay.
of it is. I don't know.
No, that's okay.
But the RBOC, when I retired in 87, they hired another general manager.
Okay.
That lasted for maybe 3 years. And her theory was that RBOC didn't have the problem anymore. I mean, we'll ask you what happened, the long story.
Mm-hmm.
When things got quiet, the community got quiet.
Right.
I mean, the business community. Money began to get scarce. The people didn't give us the money. They gave them the money that they once gave them.
Okay.
When I was a manager, because I didn't have any problem, because I didn't have to go out and scrounge for the money. The board got it.
Who sat on the board? Who made up that board?
The business community.
Okay. Do you remember who was there?
Oh, yes. They were... When it first started, the chairman of Kodak was on the board.
Is that Vaughn?
No, it was Lou Ellis.
Ellis. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. But there's always a Kodak representative there.
Okay.
There was four that I went through.
Four members?
Right.
Okay.
From Kodak.
Oh, from Kodak.
Kodak would name
I see.
Their own people. You take this job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Xerox had people on the board. Bosch and Lomb had people on the board.
Right.
The banking community through the... I forgot the name of it now. The consortium of banks. They got
mm-hmm.
an agency, too. They had members on the board.
Okay.
There were 22 board members. They didn't call them board members, they called them trustees.
Wow.
And we come up with a budget. Okay, the managing partner of Pricewaterhouse,
mm-hmm.
the managing partner of Arthur Anderson,
mm-hmm.
the manager and partner from Pete Merritt, all of them is on the board.
Okay.
So we would come up with a budget every year.
Right.
And then those 22 people would go out and get it. They would go to their cups and tell them what we need, and they would give it to us.
I see. I see. So they were not only then board members, but they also were fundraisers, in a sense?
Pardon?
They were your fundraisers.
Right. They did the fundraising.
Right. They just went back to their companies.
Right.
And asked
for what
they
needed. Well, they got people to, you know, they licked their offices. They had presidents, vice presidents, secretaries, and treasurer and all that kind of thing, on the board.
Mm-hmm.
I was the general manager. I was the CEO. I was the general manager.
Uh-huh.
And I served at the pleasure of the board. They could hire me and get, you know, whatever.
Sure.
But you have to, everything is politically motivated.
Mm-hmm.
On every board, somebody dominates.
I was just going to ask you, who was the top dog on that board?
If I needed $500,000,
mm-hmm.
Kodak might give me $200,000 of it. And then the other several members on the board, they don't have to come up with that much, not like Kodak did.
Right.
But there's political, but so when we decide to spend it, Kodak had a big voice into how we spend it.
I see.
Most of it was their money. I remember, you know, that's the way it works, simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
They dominated.
Okay.
But they were very good. We got along very well.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to cope with that board. Now, everybody can cope with a board.
Right.
You know, I if I wanted to do something And I go to the board meeting and brought it up. They would chew me up and spit me out. But I could go to one of the board members that I knew had all the clout and tell him about it, have lunch with him and talk about it. He's about to say, yeah, it sounds like it might work. I go to the board, my board meeting now. I got to present it. When I bring it up, that man would take it and do the presenting himself and say, he make a motion that we go ahead and do this. And about six or seven of them would break their neck the second motion. They wanted to be on it. It was funny how you could play that board.
Who was your go-to person? Who was the one that you knew you could always count on?
The fellow from Kodak.
Elliers?
Pardon?
Elliers?
No, he was gone then. There was a lot of them since then. Uh-huh. His name was Ken Howard.
Ken Howard.
He was the director of community services at Kodak.
Okay.
He's also was an ordained minister too, Colgate graduate.
Okay.
I call him the dropout minister.
I have seen his name.
He went to Kodak. He came from Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And went to go to school here, Colgate. And he got him a part-time job at Kodak while he was working, while mm-hmm. he was going to school. Mm-hmm. So when he finished school, he never left Kodak.
Okay.
He stayed and became a director of that department. And I could get along with him very well. A lot of people didn't like him, but I could get along with him very well.
Mm-hmm.
If I told him I was going to do this, if he said yes. The managing partner of Arthur Anderson was another one in mind. I called it my pocket, so to speak.
Okay.
If I had some problem, he would have helped bail me out of it.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
I did some things, you know. Boards are funny.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like it.
They didn't like that you were...
I mean, something I was doing.
I see.
But rather than buck me and my support, they said they would make a motion that we do it, but we're doing it under duress, you know.
I see.
You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we did had to be in the minutes.
Right.
If it wasn't in the minutes, it wasn't authorized.
Right. And we know the authorization is important with Kodak.
So anyway, it was just how we worked.
Right.
That's how it got started. You asked the question, I'm going roundabout with.
No, that's good. Were there visible tensions on that board? Were there people who would challenge Kodak's dominance?
Yes, a couple. And they left. I was glad to see them leave. They left and went other places.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, there were some that would challenge them.
What kinds of things would they challenge about?
Things that somebody wanted to do. They didn't want to be bothered with it. Okay, one of the real rivalry we had was the president and CEO of the Industrial Management Council.
Industrial Management Council.
IMC, they called it.
Okay.
That's an agency that was right at that time, but Jack Hostetler was the president and CEO.
Okay.
And that's like a country club for the larger businesses. It's a big... unique. Every large business was a member of that club.
Mm-hmm.
And he led people to believe if I called the telephone company
mm-hmm.
and say I wanted something, the rumor that what they would say, when they hung up talking to me or when I left his office, the first thing he would do, call Jack Hostetler.
Okay.
And talked to Jack Hostetler. Clarence Irwin was in here, and we talked about blah, blah, this. And what do you think of it? And Jack Hostetler said, I don't like that. I can forget it.
Okay.
That was the image that Jack liked to project.
Okay.
Okay, he was that kind of clout.
Mm-hmm.
There's a member on the board challenged him. Said, I don't think one man had that much say-so. And he went directly to Kodak after the board had said, no kind of way. He went directly to Kodak with that.
Who was that man?
He's not here any longer. He's in, last I heard of him, he's in Cleveland. I don't know where. He left town.
Okay.
But he was a favorite son with the telephone company.
Okay.
He was a young executive. Hello? Moving up fast.
Okay.
Hello? Probably would be the next CEO, but he left.
So his position on the board was in conjunction with the telephone company.
Mm-hmm. He was a telephone representative.
Okay.
He was very smart.
Mm-hmm.
And he sold the deal.
Okay.
That they said no to. And it made this man look bad because he had said it wasn't going to work.
I see.
And you know, that kind of politics.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody had strength. Now, when I retired, they hired a young lady to replace me.
Okay.
Yeah, well, how you doing?
The first thing, she was smart, though. She talked the board into allowing her to get an executive program at the University of Rochester.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And get an MBA.
Uh-huh.
Her big mistake was when she got the MBA, she felt that she's just as smart as anybody on the board then.
I see.
But you can't do that. You know, I could say to a banker, and I'm talking to a banker. And to me, he's the dumbest man I ever saw. It's a terrible banker. I'm not going to tell him he's stupid.
Right.
I'm going to let him go ahead and if I'm going to get some money from him, I appreciate what he did. He was helpful. He enabled me to accomplish my job by letting me to do this. You know, I make him feel good.
Right.
But she wasn't that way.
Okay.
And she told a few of our staunch supporters that they were stupid.
Okay.
You don't know what you're doing. So, you know, that attitude.
Uh-huh.
And the money dried up.
I see.
When the money dried up, she said that the agency had outlived its purpose. First of all, you went back to the board and talked the board into restructuring the status they had at Kodak. I mean that the State Department that gave them the cooperation, you know, charter to do it.
Right.
It was a 501(c)(3), of course, nonprofit.
Okay.
But she changed the structure of the board. There's a president of the board, vice president, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
She was a young manager. She changed the structure. She became the president and CEO.
Did the board need to approve that?
Yeah, they did approve it.
They did approve it.
She talked them into doing that. But what she didn't realize, the board had gotten tired of that thing, too.
I see.
The RBOC, it was thorn in their flesh. You know, they got sick of getting up early in the morning, coming to their meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So she talked them into allowing it to happen. So she became the president and CEO.
Okay.
And then she couldn't get any money.
I see.
They didn't give her the money that they could get.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't understand that politics of it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have... I could sit there. I didn't have to worry where the money was coming from. All I needed was to get my budget approved.
I see.
And they would get me the money.
I see. Mm-hmm.
But she didn't. She had to go out herself.
Okay. Okay.
And she had a different approach than those... To those guys, you know, when you... You got to understand the structure. Those guys that were trustees of the agency was also executives in those companies.
Right.
But they would make a deal with somebody over the golf game this afternoon, you know. They could do things that way, you know.
Right.
And all of them, even some of the people from the agency that were giving us the money, they had a say-so in getting it to us. Also represented other agencies, too, that was getting nonprofit money, you know.
I see.
And I've been out, and they'd be talking. I remember the guy that from Arthur Anderson.
Uh-huh.
His baby. Now, he dominated the board at Al Seeger Center, that foundation they got.
Oh, sure, sure.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, he's trying to get some money for RVOC.
Mm-hmm.
And he want to know, what are you going to do for me if my Al Seeger thing? You know, they could
right, sure.
That networking, you know.
Yep.
She didn't have that experience, but she didn't realize that. I told her she was going to mess things up. She did.
Mm-hmm.
So when it dried up, she closed it up.
She just closed it up.
Mm-hmm. They took the money and they had to, you know, everything we have is nonprofit. We got, you know, we couldn't sell it or nothing.
Right.
We had to give it to another agency.
Right.
But that's how they disposed of it.
Hmm.
I think we gave the money to the Urban League.
Okay.
That we had it.
I see. Okay. So, RBOC's purpose is to help establish black-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. So how does RBOC do that? You sort of mentioned earlier they help with technical
financial and management.
Tell me how that works. Give me an example. Tell me...
When we first started, we set up what they call a lot of mom-and-pop type business, your little grocery stores on the corner and that kind of thing.
Sure.
But later on, they decided the emphasis should get a little more meat on the bone, so to speak.
Okay.
But the purpose, they had several things. Number one, you had to create an atmosphere in the community to do business with minorities. The larger businesses, the Kodaks and this, they were around, but they didn't have no customers that they were dealing with minorities.
Right.
So you got to establish, you got to create an atmosphere that will allow the minority business to survive once you get started.
They needed customers.
Mm-hmm. Kodak was a large supporter.
Okay.
They had a department in the company. They hired another guy that worked in what we call urban affairs.
Okay.
That kept statistics on what Kodak was doing, you know. You dealt with him, he would get you into the buyers and you would buy the services that we were selling or whatever, you know, that kind of thing.
I see. So it sounds
so we
like...
we created an atmosphere, number one. And then we tried to provide services, educational opportunities for potential entrepreneurs. You know, a lot of them didn't have any business savvy, so to speak. You know,
sure.
Minorities did everything in this country just about, but sat in the driver's seat.
Right.
They got the technical skills. Mm-hmm. You can go to the garage and they fix your car. Sure, they tune it up real good, give you a nice job. He never owned that place before. He didn't realize there's some overhead. The business skills they didn't have.
Right.
And, you know, I used to have a little saying that you can train a businessman, you can train a man into business, but entrepreneurs are born.
Right.
They didn't just come out of this. You know, you take a Kodak, there's probably some of the best brains that day you can think of. Mm-hmm. They're trained, they come from Harvard, from Yale, or Princeton, or somewhere. You know, they're really trained. But they don't own Kodak. If they did, it might not be a Kodak.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So,
right.
You got to try to deal with that. Then you got to understand that the people you're dealing with is not as astute as you would like for them to be. So you got to allow for that. Don't make him feel bad because he doesn't have the... You know, they'll tell you anything as long as they want something.
Right.
Then that you're giving the money, you can't control it.
Right.
You get it a lot. We went through a lot of... But they had a Clarence Ingram down there that could deal with that kind of thing.
Well, it sounds to me like what RBOC is doing is on both ends, really. That you in many ways provide the technical know-how and the financial assistance to open the business, and then once the business is opened, you made sure there was a market for that business.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We did a market study.
Mm-hmm.
Eugene Fram, I know you heard that name. Gene Fram, the marketing expert out of RIT, he was on the board too.
Okay.
You know, he gave me more graduate students to work on project with me, you know. You know, we got a man, got a little larger grocery store than the corner one. You know, the one on the corner. You don't know about marketing.
Right.
So we got somebody going to help him market this place, you know, give him some technical help.
So RBOC had volunteers.
Oh, yes.
Graduate student volunteers.
Oh, yes.
Working. And they came from RIT, or they came from all the
RIT, University of Rochester. We got them from Kodak. We got a fellow that was in the electronic business or something. Got a contract with the government. He don't know nothing about the work dealing with the government.
Mm-hmm.
So we called Stromberg Carlson. That was another company that used to be there.
Right.
Right now.
Yep.
to come over and help our client bid on jobs. You know, because they didn't have that skill.
Okay. So in your estimation, were they teaching them how to get these skills, or were they supplementing the work for them?
Both ways, really. Okay. Almost double. There was a lot of, for example, I could go out to Rochester Products, which was General Motors.
Okay. It's Rochester Products?
Was it? Now it's called Delco. I remember it was called?
Delco. Okay, sure.
Now. Yeah, yep. Not Delco. It's called Delphi.
Delphi. Oh, yeah, sure. Delphi. Okay.
We had a guy that was in the heating and air conditioning business.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of technical skills. Let me tell you this story a little bit.
Sure.
Might give you something to work for. We had a man that started out. He went to Kodak as an apprentice, sheet metal apprentice.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as he was there 3 years, and once he finished the sheet metal work and got his apprentice card, that he's a gentleman now.
Yeah.
He left.
Okay.
And went to work for a large heating outfit here called O'Grady Heating and Cooling.
Okay.
And as soon as he got a job and went to work, that skill went on strike.
Hmm.
So now he's working for them, but he's not working because he's on strike. So he said he always wanted to be a businessman. So it's a good time now for him to try it.
Okay.
He had a bunch of tools. So he started a company.
If I could, are the tools from Kodak? Is that part of the apprentice program?
No, he had his own tools.
Okay.
He's a gentleman now. He's a heating and cooling person. But
I
had no experience.
Uh-huh.
But he started a company, heating and cooling.
Okay.
Had a lot of technical skills. They were building Southtown Plaza at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not a union person. He couldn't even bid on the job.
Right.
So they played games around, and they got the place up. And the people that put Wilmer, I think, built it, I'm not sure now.
Mm-hmm.
But what they did, they gave him the contract to service the complete plaza.
Who gave him the contract?
The owner
of Southtown Plaza.
Right.
Okay.
Now he got all the skills. He can do it himself, but he got to hire people. And they're not going to let him hire a non-union person because it's a union facility.
Right.
So he decided he would go out and unionize himself. He did.
He did.
Got in the union.
What year is this?
Oh, around 71, 72.
Okay.
And they broke him. He couldn't get his arms around it. He got, first of all, it became popular. I use that word.
Okay.
It wasn't popular. They get bounty points if they did. If the community supported the minority businesses.
Right.
The emphasis was on doing business with minorities.
Mm-hmm.
He got a going business. Okay, when they built Phillips Village out in Webster, Xerox had just got going real good. They won the village out there. When they got that building going, they gave him the contract to install all of the heating and cooling in that whole complex.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge job going on in Syracuse at the post office. They gave him that contract.
Mm-hmm.
He's a minority with a lot of skills as a sheet metal person.
Mm-hmm.
But he got to have foremen to do the business.
Right.
And they got to be union people.
Right.
So he got them. He hired them.
Are they white or are they black?
White. They had to be white. No blacks in the union.
That's why I was questioning.
And they eat them alive.
Of course they did.
They eat them alive.
Mm-hmm. So even though he was black and able to get into the union, he couldn't get foremen and employees.
No.
That were
they
black
had to get
and
got to go through the apprenticeship programs.
Right.
And you need people today.
Right.
If you got a contract. He had over maybe $8 or $9 million contracts up and going. But they eat him alive. Those foremen did. Mm-hmm. Those foremen that he hired, they bring in their friends and they didn't work. And it's just messy. Mm-hmm. He knew nothing about cost control. You know, the guy did. He had a technical skill, but no business skills.
Right.
But he survived and stayed out there for quite a while. Then he got a huge contract with General Motors. General Motors gave him a big contract.
Mm-hmm.
He went into trucking business.
Okay.
That didn't last too long. Truckers he had didn't fan out. They'd leave going, every day about 8 trucks left Rochester going to Amarillo, Texas.
Okay.
Hauling, goods. But the drivers, they slept on the job and they didn't do it. And he didn't have the help to, an organization wasn't training to take care of them kind of problems.
Right.
So he lost his shirt.
So what role is RBOC playing to support him during these business ventures? He's having trouble with
technical people to help him, get in there. But then you got to be careful when you loan a person $500,000, $2 million to get a business going.
Mm-hmm.
And then sit there and try to tell him how he should spend the money. That's not easy.
Right.
If I'm gonna curse you out, I got to pay this money back. Who's going to build back, you or me? That kind of thing, So, you got to deal with that too.
Sure.
And we try to get him to get his, we get, find some school, we get somebody at RIT to set up a little special course that's going on, beginners, something.
Mm-hmm.
We did a lot of things like that to make sure that the person got some skills.
Right.
And then we tried to give him some technical, somebody that's in that area. Wegman, wasn't Wegman then, used to be Star Market, I think. Star Market or one of those markets. They used to give us a lot of people to work.
Okay.
Then we had larger janitorial people, janitorial supplies, janitorial, a lot of that work was out there. They could get it.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have they couldn't bid. They didn't know how to, to put a package together, and you got that to contend with.
Right. So
we did a lot in the years that we were in operating, though. I was able to, I was there the longest, I was able,
Sure.
Get the credit for it.
No, it's your baby in a lot of ways.
Deal with the minority and the majority.
Mm-hmm.
There's an art in doing that now.
Absolutely.
And you have to know how. What's the other song that? Know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
Know when to walk away.
Know when to walk away.
Right.
And then there's some people you got to be able to know the community that you're dealing with. That's another art too.
Mm-hmm.
If you know the community, then you can work with the community. I had a lot of friend minorities that would tell me certain things that I shouldn't be doing. Guys come in and need some help. I want some money. Some of my friends would tell me, don't look at that guy in the money. He's not going to pay you back. That kind of thing. You got to have some ins and outs to survive.
Sure.
But she didn't learn that.
Right.
She learned business from Simon School of Business. Technical part of it. She got the theory, but she hadn't applied that.
Let's talk a little bit about theory and practice. You've outlined very well, I think, the theory behind the creation of RBOC.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had to tell me, in practice, what RBOC did for Rochester, how would you summarize that? What do you see the... In practice, what do you see their role as?
They established a very large size business here. You don't hear about them that much.
Okay.
Remember telling me the gentleman that had the air conditioning and that kind of thing?
Sure.
He has a place now over off of Colfax called Cannon Industry.
Okay.
He has probably 150 employees over there. He owns the building, and he's operating, and he's surviving. Eltrex Industry, I know you heard of Eltrex.
I know about Eltrex.
Well, Eltrex is surviving. There wasn't a WDKX here when we, until we came here. They're surviving.
Right.
I think they're number two on the chart, according to the Avatron. You know, I don't know. You know, I don't listen to radio that much. But they're surviving. As Andrew Lanson would say, you can't play what you want to hear. You got to play what the people want to hear.
Right.
They're the one that's paying the bills.
Right. So you you've given some very concrete examples of businesses. Was there a larger symbolic impact of RBOC? A symbolic impact? Is RBOC an organization that people point to and say, you know, there's something that we're proud of? Is there a way in which RBOC was larger than just the businesses that it set up?
Yes, the businesses that are out there doing well, they'll give you a singing the praises of RBOC, but the one that didn't do so well, they'll say they'll run another game on you.
I see.
You got that to deal with, too.
I see.
You know. The man that went there and got some help, some real concrete help, he'll sing your praises.
Right.
But there, a lot of them just came there because it was there. I go around to RBOC and get me a business loan.
Right.
But they had no intention of paying that money back when they got it.
Okay.
A lot of them didn't. But at that time, I guess the community, the larger community, now I'm thinking they looked at which is cheaper, let them tear up the city or we'll let them waste this little money. That's a small price to pay for. I'm estimating what they, because they did some crazy things. You know, I had a banker, I had a client that had borrowed an old $300,000. And the banker said this to me. He said, Clint, we lost that business. It ain't worth a nigga. It ain't gonna ever make. He said, but I'm not ready to tell the committee that we have blown $300,000. The timing isn't good right now.
Right.
So what he did, we kept the man. The man come down, he got a problem. You need $10,000. The banker would give it to him. You need $20,000, the banker would give it to him. Then he said to me, what difference does it make if I say we lost $400,000 or $500,000? You know, what difference does it make?
Right.
He let the man stay there another year, then close him down.
So that the time was right for him.
Time was right for him to face that.
Sure.
That we had and I saw a lady at the banker sit there and looked at the man. He was talking so beautiful. I was waiting to talk with her. So he only wanted to borrow $5,000, so she gave it to him. And when he got left, she talking to me. He left. She took the note and tear it up and put it in the wastebasket. I says, why'd you do that? She said, you're not going to be able to pay me back. I said, why are you loaning the money then? This is what she said to me. She said, Clarence, every person needs an opportunity to make an ass out of himself. Those are the words she said to me. And she forgot about the money. You know, that kind of thing went on.
Right.
But you got to look at it, and you can't use that for an everyday occurrence.
That's not good business practice.
No. But you look at it and you learn a lot from them kind of experiences.
Sure.
How people do things. And they do things for a long run, and you're looking at the short end of it.
Sure.
If I get this kid up and walking, he's in good shape. But I got to make sure he can run.
Right.
After he get up there. You know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
But it's there's an art in it. And there's a lot of trial and error.
So if we could switch gears a little, we didn't have a whole lot of time last time we met to talk about your church involvement. You indicated that you were very involved with Mount Olivet Baptist Church. So can you tell me a little bit more about your experiences with the church, how you were involved, what that was like?
That's easy and hard.
Okay.
First of all, my father was a Baptist minister.
Okay.
I grew up in that that kind of an experience.
Mm-hmm.
But I came here back in the early 50s.
Right.
And I attended a lot of different churches. You know, just, it's always been a meet to get involved in some church.
A what to get involved?
Of a meet to
I
get
see.
Involved in some way.
Uh-huh.
I almost joined a Methodist church here. I like the church.
Okay.
I say to myself, if I did that, my father would turn over in the grave. So I end up joining my father.
Okay. What Methodist church was it going to be? Hmm. Cornhill?
Nope. Well, nope. The one down on Curvis Street called AME Zion.
Okay. Okay.
And there was a young man who was an attorney just out of school. He was a church school superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
And he resigned. And I guess I came along at the right time. They voted me right in for the superintendent. They gave me that job.
Okay. At Mount Olivet.
At Mount Olivet.
Okay.
So I stayed there 7 years.
As a church superintendent.
Right.
All right.
And then for 9 years.
What seven years were those? Do you recall?
From 1956. 7 years from that. 7 to 63, I guess you would say.
Those are some important years.
Okay. Then I was lay advisor to the kids, the BYF, the Baptist Youth Fellowship,
yep.
for 9 years.
After that?
They was all running that together.
So till 66 or so you did
right.
that job?
Right. I said I was shooting into 63, with the BYF until 65.
Okay.
That's what I left there.
All right.
And then I became, there were two or three others that needed, we had a general expense treasurer.
A general expense treasurer?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I run that. Then there's a maintenance and improvement, MIF they called it.
Okay.
Maintenance. MNI. I was treasurer of that.
Okay.
I don't know, for 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
Then I became a trustee.
What does a church supervisor do? What kinds of things did you do in that role?
For the church school superintendent, I had the responsibility of overseeing what the teachers were doing.
The
and
church
that kind of thing.
School superintendent.
Right.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, superintendent, like the whole.
Yep, I see. And so then you become a trustee.
I became a trustee.
And what years were you a trustee?
Yeah, I retired. Irene, please do me a favor. This is my wife.
Hi, very nice to meet you.
How are you?
You know downstairs on that little thing down there where I got retired from the trustee, that picture, bring it up, please. Give it to me.
That would have been a nice place to have this down there, Clarence, because it's dinner time.
So, as a trustee, what did you do?
Well, the trustees, a deacon in a Baptist church controls, or they take care of the spiritual needs of the church.
Mm-hmm.
The trustee do the physical needs of the church.
Right.
6 of those years, I was there for 21 years.
Okay.
6 of those years, I was the vice chairperson of the trustees.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I got involved and how I want to get a year or something off of that.
Yeah.
See, this is when I retired.
Uh-huh.
They gave me this. This is Brian Brothers I used to sing with.
Okay.
They put that picture up there.
Uh-huh,
this is
sure.
me. That's me and my wife.
Uh-huh.
This is me doing something I don't know. These are trustees.
I see. And so 85 is the year that you retire, is that right?
Or that's it, 1985.
Okay.
1984, 1985. That's No, I retired since then. This was trustees in 95.
Okay, in 85?
I was a trustee then. I was in long before then.
Okay.
But I retired. I thought that was on here. I got a plaque around here somewhere. They gave me a plaque. And then I'm a trustee emeritus. But it had to be in 2000.
Okay. So you have described yourself as not being a crusader.
No, I'm not.
And yet, you're very involved with Mount Olivet.
Oh,
who
yes.
was very involved with those movements in Rochester.
Oh, yes.
So tell me a little bit about that. How was Mount Olivet involved?
Me for all of these?
Sure.
Well, Mount Olivet has a very historical record in Rochester. I think they are the first or the second black Baptist church in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they were, this is probably something this you don't know. There's a lot of different Baptists.
Okay.
Mount Olivet is an American Baptist church.
Okay.
The majority of the black Baptist church in the city here is National Baptist.
Okay.
There's Progressive Baptist, and there's a Southern Baptist.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Rochester is a American Baptist. They got organized in 1910.
Okay.
That's when they got accepted in the Monroe County Baptist Association in 1910.
Okay.
Ever since day one, they have always been associated with Colgate Rochester Adventist School.
Okay.
So their leadership was different than the norm. And what went on, people just, you know, when I came to Rochester and I said, "Do you go to church? Where do you church at?" "I go over there to the Baptist church." They'd refer to that then as Mount Olivet. When
it
they said
the
Baptist
church,
you was automatically talking about Mount Olivet.
Sure.
So when something came up and they tried to get some churches involved, Mount Olivet was on the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they always had what a lot of people refer to as educated ministers.
Okay.
They never had one that didn't have at least a degree in divinity or something. You know, he didn't just go up and say that he was out there.
Sure.
Because of that, he was easier to deal with. I mean, for the establishment now to deal with than the one down on the corner got the shoestring.
The storefront.
Yeah, storefront.
Yep.
So that's how they got involved. And they were involved in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. It was an activist church.
Very active. And it still is.
Uh-huh.
You're going to find out something about my other. Ask my wife.
Okay.
She... I tease, we tell her a lot. I ask her sometimes, why don't you move her bed going down there?
Uh-huh.
You know, she's there at least 4 or 5 times a week.
Okay.
She was the first African-American that became president of the Rochester Genesee region of the American Baptist Churches.
Okay.
Then she became the president. She was at his board, to a board meeting of the American Baptist Women Group of that. Irene?
Yes.
Stick your head in the door.
Yes.
What part of the American Baptist Church were you at this morning at that meeting?
I was at Mount Olivet.
Huh?
It was the regional meeting, and I was at Mount Olivet.
The regional meeting?
Yes.
Was it women or the whole region?
Women.
Women. That's American Baptist Women to call, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's part of the American Baptist Genesee.
Uh-huh.
It's part of the, meaning all of the American Baptist Church is headquartered in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
They have regions all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
This region through here is called the Rochester Genesee region.
Okay.
That's where she was at Mona at the...
I see.
Yeah. I said that she's very involved.
Okay. So if you go back to this period in question, the late 1950s, the early 1960s, pre-riot, what is Mount Olivet doing? What are their priorities in the Rochester community? There's police brutality cases happening, there's housing issues happening, there's education issues. What was the church prioritizing? How were they getting involved in these issues?
Education-wise, they're very involved.
Okay.
I can't tell you what year now, but they have a program. There was a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
The only criteria of that scholarship, if you were an active member of the church,
mm-hmm.
involved in something,
okay.
attending it,
mm-hmm.
and you graduate from high school and get accepted in a college,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get a scholarship.
Okay.
The minimum amount they give you is $1,000. And they have given that. Some years we've had as many as 16 and 17 kids.
Wow.
But they have all gotten scholarships. My mm-hmm. daughter graduated from Sperry High School out here in 1978. They was going then, and they still giving them out.
Mm-hmm.
They gave them out this year.
Yep.
I think
yep.
I only had 7 kids.
Fantastic.
But that kind of thing, they're very active in that. Mm-hmm. Very active. And, of course, the American Baptist churches have a unique program. My granddaughter's here visiting me this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And she just came back last week from Cooper College. We seen they have a American Girls Camp
mm-hmm.
at Cooper. That's American Baptist Church.
Okay.
Going on all, you know, every year.
Uh-huh, sure, sure.
And my daughter-in-law that said that, she was the minister of that 1 year
mm-hmm.
when she was still in school.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you have outlined a lot of what you think it takes to be a successful business person in this Rochester environment. That there's a lot of negotiating, a lot of politics, a lot of moving back and forth between various communities. Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, as a business person, how did Fight do as a business? How successful were they with their business?
You mean not as a business, you mean as an agency?
Mm-hmm.
You mean the Fight organization itself?
The Fight organization itself.
In the short years after the urban unrest or the riot period, the
mm-hmm.
short years after that,
mm-hmm.
they were very effective.
Okay.
But when other agencies came along, their approach was so far out that they were not effective.
Okay.
They couldn't deal with the larger community.
Okay.
They dealt with the grassroots persons that they just wanted something to fuss about
mm-hmm.
or to say that mm-hmm. wasn't going on that should be going on. There was a lot of that support.
Right.
But actually to get the larger community behind it,
mm-hmm.
they didn't have that kind of... They could have, but...
Okay.
This, I don't know whether you read the history of the Fight organization.
I've done a little bit of research on it. I know how it came about.
They brought here a fellow by the name of Saul Alinsky?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
His approach was different, but it was effective.
Mm-hmm.
He did what he came here to do.
Okay.
But when he took hands off and kind of backed off,
mm-hmm.
they went crazy with it.
Fight did?
Yeah.
Okay.
And of course they rubbed a lot of people the wrong way,
mm-hmm.
not knowing the politics, so to speak. Know when to fold them and know when to hold them.
Right.
They didn't learn that along the way.
Right, okay.
So they became a thorn in the flesh of a lot of people.
Okay.
And that's how Aircraft came out, you know that, don't
mm-hmm.
you?
Mm-hmm.
And the day they got control of it, they changed the name on it.
Right.
Because as long as the thing was fight on,
yep.
They wasn't going to get nothing.
Yep.
You're not going to get anybody to support them.
Sure. I think you...
But Xerox had a lot of stake in it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they went to Kodak to try to talk them into... Mm-hmm. Kodak grabbed them and laughed and says, I didn't get no glory out of it when it started, so why do you want my help now? You know,
sure.
That kind of thing. It's... Everything is political motivated.
Sure. So as you're... I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I want to be clear that I understand what you're saying. Was fight politically naive? Was fight politically naive?
Politically naive, you says?
Mm-hmm.
Suppose you might say yes, but as long as people were running it, it couldn't be not politically naive because there were people for both groups. Now, today the minority community is predominantly Democrat, as you probably know that.
Okay.
There's a lot of old timers in Rochester, the old time, you know, the what you call the old school Republicans. And they got moved out in just a few years, but you have both segments on a board trying to get some consensus as to which direction we're going in. You have some...
On the board of fight?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, you will have some problems.
Uh-huh.
Because some things you want to do, the strike Republican ain't going to always, because this board, this agency is predominantly Democrats.
I see.
But you have gotten the Republicans that when it started working with the Linsky and got it going, now the direction you're out there, the things you're doing, I don't want to be associated with it.
Hmm.
You got that problem.
I see.
So yes, politics plays a lot of role in every kind of thing.
Sure.
Now you can do that politically and survive. Again, if you realize the other person's situation that he's confronted with, you say walking in my shoes,
mm-hmm.
you put him in it, and you put yourself in the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
How would you react? You know, you can't expect a person to burn the bridge up that he crossed over on.
Right.
You know, you might not have gotten across on that bridge, and you might not could have gotten across on that bridge, but he did,
mm-hmm.
and it's important to him.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Howard Cole. That's how he got along. He was a maverick, but he got along with the establishment. He was a Republican, though. But he got along with the establishment, with the courts and all that kind of thing, you know, and maneuver through.
It was easier for a black man to be a Republican, you think?
During that period, yes, it was easy. The majority, see, the minorities, the blacks in Rochester, lived predominantly in the 7th Ward and the 3rd Ward.
Mm-hmm.
That was over across from Clinton Avenue.
Right, sure.
And both of those wards were predominantly Republicans. They had town leaders or ward leaders or whatever they were. And everything that went along went through those ward leaders. You know, there's a few jobs they could give out to different people.
Mm-hmm.
They could get them from that, you know.
Sure.
So it meant a lot to them.
Uh-huh.
But then a lot of things that newcomers came in.
Mm-hmm.
As old Rochesterian would tell you, they were doing good until the newcomers came up and messed up that thing, you know.
Right.
But their approach... You know, you can do anything as long as your approach is right.
Mm-hmm.
And you can that piece of poetry that says you can do something my son and then stamp my son and you a man? What's this piece of poetry? I can't think of it right now. I can't think of it now. If you can keep your head with all men about you or something like that and do something with...
I'm not sure I know it.
Anyway.
So
everybody can't deal in both worlds.
How much time do we have? In the last minute, is there anything that we need to know that we haven't asked you about?
No, I can think of. I don't know what you're really collecting. It's going to be interesting, though.
I'll let you read all of it. I'll let you read all of it. Thank you so much. I appreciate the chance to talk with you again.
Okay, I'm sorry that I really wasn't expecting you or set up for it.
That's all right. All right. I'm sorry
But I'm glad I was here.
Intruded on your evening here.
No, I just. Everybody had been, my daughter-in-law took my car with ORIT. Her mm-hmm. daughter wants to look at that school.
I see.
My wife was out.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just sitting here.
Did you not check your calendar or you didn't write it down?
No, I didn't. This is my calendar.
Yeah.
My wife says I'm not what I used to be.
You better think about a new calendar.
But anyway, it's been nice seeing you again, nice seeing you again, and you look a little different than you did over in the university. Do you have a different face when you get to work?
So, I'm going to leave the original transcript with you.
Okay.
And when we get the transcript from this section of it, I'll either mail that to you or make arrangements to drop it off to you.
Okay.
And you can take whatever time you need to look at it and to look if there's things that we've got wrong, or you know, you see a spelling of a name that's wrong, or you remember that something isn't exactly how it is in there. You may,